Next case is 04-1739, James A. Seidenstricker versus Miller Pavement Maintenance, Inc. Ms. Hensel, we'll get you some water if you'll start your argument.
May it please the court, my name is Jan Hensel, and I am counsel for the appellant Miller Pavement Maintenance. With me at council table is Roger Sabo, who filed an amicus brief on behalf of the Ohio Contractors Association, Flexible Pavements, Inc., and Builders Exchange of Central Ohio. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue before the court today is a straightforward one, but it is one of first impression. The question is whether a claim that an employment termination violates the public policy reflected in Revised Code Section 412390 is triable to a jury as a matter of constitutional right. For three compelling reasons, appellant submits that the answer to that question is no. The first reason is that the statute itself, 412390, does not provide the right to a jury trial. It's clear that the public policy of this state is reflected in its legislative enactments, and because the legislature chose not to provide the right to a jury trial for a 412390 claim, there should be no right to a jury trial on a public policy claim derived from that statute. The second compelling reason that this court should hold that there's no right to a jury trial on a public policy claim based on 412390 is the issue of stare decisis. All of this court's decisions that have looked at the question of whether there is a constitutional right to a jury trial on a particular cause of action hold that the answer to that question is based upon whether the particular cause of action existed at the time that the constitutional guarantee was adopted. In this case, we're looking at a section of the Workers' Compensation Act. And the Workers' Compensation Act, which was adopted pursuant to constitutional amendment in 1912, did not exist at the time the guarantee to a right to a jury trial was adopted. We're also looking at a judicially recognized public policy claim. And that claim did not exist in the state of Ohio until this court's decision in Greeley versus Miami Maintenance Contractors in 1990. The underlying common law principle with regard to employment relationships in Ohio is that the employment is at will. Because there were no public policy claims at the time the constitutional guarantee was adopted, and there were no workers' compensation statutes at that time, it's very clear that the constitutional right to a jury claim simply does not attach to a public policy claim based on 412390.
But the appellee, as you know, the appellee gives us a string of situations in which there are remedies that the juries determined that were not noticed before the Constitution was adopted.
And as we addressed in our reply brief, Your Honor, the fact that a jury decides a case doesn't mean that there's a constitutional right to have a jury decide the case. And in none of those cases was the issue before the court that is before the court today, which is whether a constitutional right to a jury trial attaches to this particular claim, and this particular claim is unique. It's a public policy claim based on 412390. I believe the appellee also argued that the existence of a jury instruction also seems to infer that there's a right to a jury trial, but as we also addressed in our briefs, there have been cases from this court that specifically hold the issue of a jury instruction doesn't mean that the constitutional right attaches.
How do we deal with the court's statement in Collins? It's pretty clear. The jury decides factual issues relating to causation and overriding justification. I mean, the Collins case deals with the four elements of the public policy. The first two are for the court. The second two are for a jury. How do we get around that case?
Well, Your Honor, again, I believe we addressed that in our briefs, but I think that goes to the historical distinction between issues of law that are addressed by the court and issues of fact that are decided by the trier of fact, which is usually a jury, but not always a jury. And if you look at the language of the Kolch decision says the first two elements are to be decided by the court. The second two elements are to be decided by the trier of fact.
Didn't we already in Collins say the trier of the fact is the jury? The jury decides the two second issues.
The issue of whether or not a jury decides a public policy claim was not before the court in Collins. The Collins was simply adopting Parrott's article that sets forth those four prongs. It was making a distinction between issues of fact and issues of law. In this case, in a 412390 claim, there are issues of fact and there are issues of law, but the judge is both the trier of fact and trier of law.
Do we have to overrule Collins to reach the conclusion you want?
Absolutely not. I think if Kolch did not overrule Collins, and Kolch again looked at those four elements and said the issues of fact are to be decided by the trier of fact.
But Kolch didn't say whether the trier of fact was the court or the jury. Kolch was really pretty silent to that. It just used the legal phrase trier of fact.
And I believe that the Collins decision was simply parroting the language of the Parrott article and wasn't making the distinction between the right to a jury trial and not the right to a jury trial. It was simply talking about issues of fact and issues of law and was making the same issue that a lot of courts have made when looking at this case. They're making the assumption that the trier of fact is to be the jury. But no court has ever before specifically ruled on the question that's presented before this court today, is whether there is a right to a jury trial on a public policy claim. And that was not before the court in Collins. It is before the court today. So I think the court can certainly hold that there's no right to a jury trial without overruling Collins, but simply clarifying that the trier of fact maybe the judge in particular cases, such as this one.
If we were to accept the Collins, it says what it says, and we do intend and did intend that the jury tries the second two issues, do you still win this case or lose this case in terms of going to a jury?
I believe we win this case because this issue was not before the court in Collins. The issue of whether there's a constitutional right to a jury trial was not before the court in Collins, and more specifically, the issue of whether there's a constitutional right to a jury trial based on the public policy reflected in 412390 was not before the court in Collins. And 412390 is a very specific statute. And I think that the argument that there's no right to a jury trial is more compelling when you're talking about a 412390 claim, because 412390 is part of the workers' comp statute. And the workers' comp statute it's uniquely a creation of statute. The Constitution granted the legislature the right to make the workers' compensation laws, and the legislature decided not to grant a jury trial for a 412390 claim. And I think that that's because when you're looking at workers' compensation issues, the whole statutory scheme is based upon a balancing of the right of the employee and the right of the employer. And as this court recognized in its recent decision, I believe it was the Coolidge case, that once an employee enters the workers' compensation system, in exchange for having the right to compensation without having to prove employer fault, they give up their common law rights in exchange for a more defined set of statutory remedies. In this case, we're talking about a retaliatory discharge statute that is part of that workers' compensation scheme. And so the issue is more compelling, I believe, when we're talking about the public policy reflected in a 412390 claim than any other statute in this state. Because if you give the right to a jury trial for a public policy claim based upon 412390. You are disrupting the intention of the legislature, and you're also disrupting that very careful balancing act that's reflected in the workers' compensation law.
Are you arguing preemption then? Are you saying the statute is preempting the public policy tort?
I am not arguing that the statute is preempting the public policy, but I think that there is a very good basis in the statutory language for the court to come to that conclusion. Because if you look at the statutory language, it's very unique in which it says, the relief which may be granted shall be limited to reinstatement with back pay if the action is based upon discharge, or an award for wages lost if based upon demotion, reassignment, or punitive action. So in the statute, the legislature specifically said that the remedies are limited. So I think there's a very good basis for this court to decide that in 412390, the legislature intended those remedies to be exclusive.
Counsel, two things. First of all, underlying all of this is the basic doctrine of employment at will and exceptions to employment at will,
right,
which are statutory, the exceptions. But the doctrine itself is common law.
The doctrine itself is common law, but it was recognized by this court in 1990. And in 1990, when the court looked at the—
I mean the doctrine of employment at will.
The doctrine of employment at will is common law.
All right. Now, my follow-up question, or the question I want to get to, is if we follow what you would have us write and apply this constitutional examination, what does that do then to the other kinds of cases which presently go to juries but might fail to have the right? Does that mean that we have to reexamine all the other kinds of cases that go to juries that might not fit if we apply the analysis that you're asking us to adopt?
No, because what all I'm asking you to say is in this case, on these facts, there was no constitutional right to a jury trial. There was a trial to the court.
I understand. But might that, aren't there other subsets of cases out there where you have this mixture of previously and post adoption of the constitutional right to a jury trial where the legislature is perhaps silent as to the right to a jury trial. So, but everybody just assumed there was always a jury trial involved on the facts of the case.
Actually, I think this claim is very unique because this claim—
So you don't think it would spill over into other—
Because this claim is a judicially recognized claim. There aren't a lot of those out there. There's the intentional tort claim. That was a judicially recognized claim. And this claim was created by the judiciary in 1990. The cases hold that there are two sources of the right to a jury trial. There's the Constitution and there's the statute. And there are lots of cases that are tried by statute and have the right to a jury trial because the legislature indicated in the statute that that right is given by statute. This case, however, because it's a judicially created claim, is very unique.
It's a common law claim.
And the only source of the right to a jury trial in this case is the Constitution. And because there was no constitutional, because this claim just didn't exist at the time the constitutional guarantee was adopted, there can be no constitutional right to a jury trial. It's not an intentional tort claim. This court specifically looked at an age discrimination claim in Hoops, in which it talked about this constitutional basis to a right to a jury trial. And it said an age discrimination claim didn't exist at common law. And there's no constitutional right to a jury trial.
Counsel, if you would respond to the opposing counsel's characterization. When they look at the nature of the remedy claimed, they make a comment that the claims for money damages are legal in nature and, of course, were recognized as giving a right to a jury at common law. and you're focusing on cause of action. So it seems that that's our choice. Either we say it's the cause of action or it is the claim that disposes of whether there was a jury right at the time of the Constitution.
And I have researched that issue exhaustively to try to find a single case from this court that says because there is the right to money damages, there is the constitutional right to a jury trial. And that case does not exist. What the court often will do is in looking at whether a statute grants the right to a jury trial, as a measure of legislative intent, they will look to see whether the statute grants legal relief, thereby implying that the legislature intended to give the right to a jury trial in that statute. But there is no case that holds that simply the right to recover money damages gives the right to a jury trial. There's a statute, and again, this is derived from the common law, that actions for money only are triable to a jury as a matter of right. And that issue was specifically addressed by this court in the Hoops case, in which it said that an age discrimination claim is clearly not a claim for money only. That's a claim on an ordinary debt, which existed at common law. Age discrimination claims, employment discrimination claims, retaliatory discharge claims have much more to them than the claim for an ordinary debt. So, under the law of the state of Ohio, this court's jurisprudence, the issue is not the remedy, but whether the cause of action existed at the time of the constitutional guarantee.
Thank you, Ms. Hensel.
Thank you.
Mr. Gittes.
Mr. Chief Justice, if it please the court, the case that was not mentioned that does say, and this court ruled 5-2, that the remedy can create a right to jury trial as Zoppo decided in 1994, and I'll come back to that in a minute. I hope to make 3 points this morning if I have the opportunity. First, I would like to address the myth, the absolute misleading statement that the legislature is against this court's jurisprudence on public policy torts and specifically disagrees or disapproves of the case law about 412390. It's not true. This court in 1990 used its power as the arbiter of this state's common law to rule that there is a common law tort for wrongful discharge in violation of public policy. This court, as counsel just indicated, doesn't often recognize new torts in its domain of the common law, but it does it. Over a couple hundred years, I believe you could count on a couple of hands the number of times this court has done it. This was one of them. However, for over 100 years, since 1891, this court has said to the legislature, our turf is the common law. However, you have the power to limit any common law remedy that we award or we recognize unless it's based on the Constitution. You said that in Feuchter. You've said it over and over and over and over again in dozens of cases since 1891. Now, Greeley was decided 15 years ago. In the last 10 years, 6 appellate courts in this state and 2 federal courts in this state have said that there's a public policy tort with a jury right based on 412390. Courts have said it since the Wiles decision, pointing out that the remedies in 4123 are only equitable, no legal remedies. What has the legislature done? Nothing. No bill has passed. In fact, no bill has even gotten through a committee hearing with language to overrule this court's decision about the common law. There's good reason for that, because to allow a worker to be fired for seeking workers' comp destroys the bargain that the appellants and their amicus talk about. The whole constitutional framework of workers' comp, the compromise that was worked out, is meaningless if an employer can get rid of employees at the time they seek workers' comp relief. It has nothing to do with the compromise itself. It is to protect the compromise. Now, having recognized a tort, a common law tort, triggered the right to a constitutional right to a jury trial. Not only has the legislature not questioned your judgment on this, but this court made it clear in Zoppo in a series of cases, Sorrell versus Thivner, the digital analog case, that there are two components to when the constitutional right to jury trial is triggered. One of them is the type of damages. Hoops focused on the lack of legal damages, compensatory and punitive, as did Wiles, by the way. Wiles found no violation because there were compensatory and liquidated damages in the FMLA. In the dissent of the Justice Moyer joined by Justice Wright and Zoppo, the other aspect to this, besides damages, was articulated, and I'm going to quote the dissent in Zoppo, quote, "At the time of the adoption of the Ohio Constitution, plaintiffs had a right to jury trial for causes of actions involving common law torts."
Counsel, you don't dispute, do you, that 412390, an action brought purely under that, is tribal only to the court? You don't dispute that, do you?
Yes, I do not dispute that the statutory is tribal only to the court.
And so what you're saying is it's, if you add the public policy violation cause of action that was created by this court, that is what you claim gives them the jury trial.
Absolutely.
Why would attorney ever bring a suit then under 9.90 when he can have the jury trial under the public policy?
Well, because as the United States Supreme Court ruled in Little, and this court, by the way, in digital analog, cited it with approval in footnote 1, if there's a right to jury trial, judges cannot decide the facts. You can't do what happened in this case and have the judge decide that, you know, you lose, therefore you don't get a jury trial. The founders of this country, and Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justice Scalia has pointed out in a number of opinions, and I'm sure they weren't talking about any member of this court at the time they wrote about this, have emphasized the founders were skeptical about judges.
So if you accept the Collins proposition that, well, let me ask you if you do. Do you agree that Collins clearly says that points 1 and 2 are reserved for the trial court to decide?
Yes.
And if the trial court decides that there is no clear public policy, does that end the dispute?
If it doesn't meet those two elements, there is no public policy claim.
So in this case, apply Collins to this case. Apply Collins to this court's decision in the fact the trial level, because it looked like the trial court went 1, 2, 3, and 4, correct?
Absolutely.
So if the trial court found 1 and 2, what did the trial court find in this case on 1 and 2?
It found that it was a public policy, a source of public policy, and that it could be jeopardized. It met the clarity and the element. However, it said
you agree
the business,
that was proper for the court.
That was
say.
Proper for the court.
Okay, then go to 3 and 4.
The court, despite the fact that it had ruled twice on summary judgment that there were sufficient facts that a jury could conclude there was liability, the court went on to decide factually that there was no proof of pretext. The business justification was not overcome by the plaintiff in the case, a purely factual finding.
So you're disagreeing with the judge's factual findings as well as his right to make those findings and not send them to a jury.
Your Honor, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the judge's factual findings. What I'm saying is he should have never gone there. That as the Little case says and the Federalist Papers indicate, the constitutions of Ohio and the United States on these kinds of factual issues, where the judge himself found there were sufficient facts that a jury could find in favor of the plaintiff, which is why he denied summary judgment twice, he should have deferred to the jury. It's the jury's province.
So maybe, you could still go back with this case. If we rule in your favor, you could still go back to this case, try 3 and 4 to a jury, and still lose.
Absolutely,
that's
possible.
The jury could completely agree with the judge's conclusion.
Could completely agree with the judge.
Now, if the jury agrees with you and finds points 3 and 4, the judge then takes, in your scenario, or the way you read the law, the judge takes those findings then and he decides the back pay and all the point 90 claims, and the jury decides issues of punitive damages.
That's correct.
Okay.
Just like this court said in Zoppo.
I think it's perhaps a related issue, but I'd like to hear your strongest argument in support of the Court of Appeals opinion, which leaves us with the law being that the jury can, in the jury case, can decide the issues that the jury should decide under your argument and the Court of Appeals argument, but then those, that finding then is binding on the action under the statute. I have some difficulty understanding that concept, frankly. I'd like to hear your strongest argument.
Your Honor, that's what the Little case was about. Right. The basis of this is the federal Seventh Amendment jurisprudence, which this court has acknowledged is persuasive. What the court said in Little and what these points that I'm saying about Rehnquist and Scalia and Park Lawn Hosiery and other cases is this. If there's a constitutional right to jury trial, the founders wanted the common sense perception of jurors to decide credibility issues on facts, not judges. If you allow the courts in their guise of making equitable decisions, either under statutes or related equitable claims, to render a decision on all the facts adverse to a jury, you have nullified the constitutional right to jury because the judge's decisions are going to claim preclusion. If you have the judge decided first, if you technically, you have a litigation of the claims, they're identical issues. In Little, he had a Title VII case without a jury right, a 1981 case with a jury right, same elements, same burdens, just like in this case. All the proofs are the same. And what the court said is we're not going to allow a judge to effectively nullify the right to jury trial by setting up a res judicata claim, because there is a constitutional right to jury trial which trumps the judge's determinations where there's an overlap between legal claims and equitable claims, not on the legal questions, but on the factual questions.
To avoid that, I guess the non-statutory claim would have to go first. If you look at them as separate actions, which they clearly are, the non-statutory claim would have to, the public policy claim would have to go proceed first, wouldn't it?
Not really, Your Honor. What the federal courts and the U.S. Supreme Court has suggested and is the general practice is they're tried simultaneously with the judge reserving ruling on the factual parts of the legal claim.
That's a better resolution, it seems to me, than the Court of Appeals opinion here, isn't it? Is it not to have another proceeding? Although, I mean, the facts are the same. I suppose they are, but how do we don't know that for sure, I guess.
I think we do, Your Honor, in the sense that they're the same factual issues. The elements of the claims are exactly the same.
That the remedy is different.
The remedy is different, and also, this is a tort, a common law tort that this court has recognized, and as your Honor indicated in Zoppo and in your dissent with Justice Wright, and as indicated in several other cases, there are two tests for a constitutional right. One is the type of damage, as discussed in Zoppo and Hoops, by the way. The other is this a derivative of the trespass case, the classic common law claim at the time of the adoption of the Constitution. This is an intentional claim, you have to prove intent, which has legal remedies, i.e. punitive and compensatory damages. It is a classic modern version of the intentional trespass claim from the common law which existed. So on both approaches, both as to the type of claim, this court has never said you literally have to have had exactly the same claim in existence at the time of the constitutional adoption. Neither has the United States Supreme Court. The question is it of an evolution of a type of claim? And, you know, I guess if I could say to the court one thing that I think says more clearly than anything else, that what the Court of Appeals suggested makes sense, and they only suggested is that the judge shouldn't go first on the equitable claims. That's what their criticism was. Never said they couldn't do them at the same time or that the other one should go first. There is not, you can ask counsel or look at their brief, there is not a single decision anywhere in this country, state or federal, that has ever held that where there's a right to a jury trial, a judge should and can proceed with an equitable claim first and have it control the claims that's supposed to go to a jury. Not a one. I've been unable to find a single decision of any court. And there's a reason for that. It's because of the, as the Article I, Section 5 says, the inviolate right to a jury trial. And I believe, as the Justice correctly pointed out, this court has indicated in Collins there's a right to jury trial in this case. The Ohio legislature has never disagreed with it for common law claims that this court has recognized, although they could eliminate it just like that if they wanted to by statute. That's their province, just as your province is to define the common law. It's an important remedy given the importance of preventing retaliation, because the workers' comp system is destroyed unless employers are restrained from getting rid of employees who use the system. There is no support for their position, and I submit to you that under the decision in Zoppo, as well as Collins, there is no question this is exactly the kind of common law tort that constitutionally gives rise to a right to trial by jury, both because of the damages it allows and because of the type of claim it is that is a common law intentional tort.
Thank you, Mr.
Goodis.
Thank you. Ms. Hensel, you've used your time, but let me take 30 seconds.
Well, there are more points that I would like to make than 30 seconds will cover, but there are a couple important ones. First of all, the Seventh Amendment analysis of the right to a jury trial does not apply in the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio analysis is different. Secondly, and very importantly, the Court of Appeals did two things wrong here. And even if you find that there's a right to a jury trial on a 41 on the public policy claim, there's no right to a jury trial on the 412390 claim. And the Court of Appeals, the issue of the propriety of the court's judgment on the 412390 claim was not at issue in the Court of Appeals. That was conceded at oral argument, but the Court of Appeals reversed the 412390 claim and the public policy claim. There's no question that the trial court had the right to enter judgment on the 412390 claim, and that portion of the judgment, even if the other part should be tried to a jury, should not be reversed. What the trial court did was usurp the statutory...
Are you saying that you could have basically inconsistent verdicts? You could have the trial court making factual determinations, refusing to award back pay and the other remedies, and then you could have a jury finding there was a violation and awarding compensatory and punitives.
I am saying on the record in this case, that's exactly, because this case, the 4123 claim, both claims were tried to the court, and the court had the right to enter the judgment on the 412390 claim. And your point about why would anybody ever bring a 412390 claim without a public policy claim is exactly the issue of why this court should decide there's no right to a jury trial, because by allowing that public policy claim to be tried to a jury, you're usurping the specific intention of the legislature that was reflected in that statute, and again, as part of the workers' compensation scheme.
Thank you, Ms. Hensel. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.